Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
Welcome to Barbecue Nation with JT's After Hours. Conversation that took place after the broadcast ended.
It's Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. That's Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. 503-982-2033, Barclays, buysellpawn.com.
Hey, welcome to Barbecue Nation After Hours. I'm JT. We've got Meathead Goldwyn continuing our conversation from the regular show with us, and we're talking about getting your ribs squared away for the 4th of July. I mean, to me, there's no better barbecue holiday than the 4th of July. I know Labor Day, I know Memorial Day, I know Father's Day, Mother's Day, blah, 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 blah. You know, Tuesday the 16th, whatever. But to me, the 4th of July is like the big kahuna when you roll out the grills and you show your skills and you try to make people happy. So that's my thoughts on that. We left off in the regular show. We had just started to put on the ribs on the heat. That was it. That's kind of where we left off. So let's go forward from there. Let's talk about
I think a good round number for cooking ribs is 225. And in fact, all the recipes on the website and in my book are either at 225 or 325. Occasionally we have what we call warp 10, which is give it all she's got, buddy.
Yeah.
225 is a really good number for cooking meats because it's not too hot, that it doesn't squeeze out the moisture. It's a nice, low, gentle temperature. And grills are just a general pain in the butt trying to get them to an accurate temperature. So I want you to master two numbers, 225 and 325. And once you can get your unit up to those two numbers with regularity, with a degree of confidence, then you can cook just about anything. 325 is the temp I ask you to cook poultry at, because you need to render the fat in the skin in order to get a crispy turkey or a chicken skin. So you need to get it up to 325, a little higher. But 225 is a good number for cooking just about anything else. And so we're going to start these babies on the indirect side of the grill, or if you have a smoker, in your smoker at 225. Now, if you're using a gas or a charcoal grill, you can't trust the thermometer in the dome. First of all, it's up in the dome, and that's good if you're going to eat the dome. But the meat's down below 6 to 8 inches, and the temperature's different down there. So you need to get yourself a digital thermometer with a probe that you can place next to the meat, and it'll tell you the same temperature that the meat is experiencing. And those probes are not terribly expensive. You can get them for about $30, the top of the line for about $50. On AmazingRibs.com, we've got an electrical engineer who tests thermometers, ranks them, and rates them, and we have a searchable database. You can find one and mail order it from Amazon or someplace else. We don't sell anything, so we just test and review them. Get one of those. Don't trust the dome thermometer. Number two, if you should have a good instant read thermometer that you can use to stab your steaks or your pork butts or your ribs to get the meat temperature, the internal temperature. But it's kind of hard to get the internal temperature on ribs. So the general rule of thumb is at 225, if they're not any thicker than normal, your baby backs are going to take about 4 hours, and your spare ribs or your St. Louis cuts or center cut are going to take about 5 or 6 hours. Now, that's a rule of thumb, and there's a really good test you can use to see if they're done. You pick them up with your tongs, and you kind of bounce them. And if the surface cracks, that's usually a sign that they're ready. If you want to use a thermometer probe, you're shooting for around 200, 203. Some people prefer 190, but they're going to come off really tender and really juicy. Now, just before you pull them off, that's when you want to put the sauce on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to start with sauce on at the beginning. And if there's almost always sugar in these sauces, and there's a risk they'll burn. Plus, you want the smoke to land on the meat, not on the sauce. So you want the meat sitting there with just the rub, and the meat will get a nice smoky flavor. You're going to use wood chunks. Chips will work, but chunks are better, I think. And you'll throw them on the coals or on the flavor bars of your gas grill and let them burn. A lot of people get upset when they catch on fire and burn. But actually, when they burn with a yellow flame, they make a better flavor because that yellow flame is consuming all of the funky flavors and the odd compounds that you don't want on the meat. When it's smoldering, you're likely to get a less excellent flavor from the wood. So let them burn. And you don't need a lot of smoke. One of the worst things you can do is oversmoke. You oversmoke them, and they're going to taste like an old ashtray. So two or three chunks at the start of the cook. When the meat is cold, the smoke will adhere to cold meat better than at warm meat. And then maybe a half hour or so later, when the wood is burned off, then you can add another chunk or two of wood.
That sounds, you know, that it's interesting when you were talking about let them burn and stuff like that, because you just said something that a lot of people would freak out about, quite frankly, you know, with their gas grills or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's good, solid advice. And I, you know, try it at home. The thing you don't want to do, especially up here in the Northwest, don't throw a tree branch on there. He's just talking about little chunks of wood, okay?
Yeah.
Nothing with a lot of pitch on it or anything, just little chunks of wood.
Golf ball size or bigger.
Yeah.
In that range, you'll get a nice flavor that way, and you have to experiment. Smoke flavor is like salt. Some people like things really salty. Some people like things really smoky. You'll have to find your own preference and level. So start easy, two or three chunks of wood at the start, and that's enough. And taste it, and if you say, gosh, I wish it had more smoke, then add more smoke later. Now, don't obsess over what kind of wood, because, first of all, when you go down to the hardware store and you buy a bag of wood and it says cherry on it, there's no Appalachian Controle on what's inside that bag. You have no idea if that's really cherry or oak or whatever. And number two, if cherry that's grown in Washington State is different than cherry that's grown in New York State, how much bark is on it is going to influence the flavor. Is it air-dried or kiln-dried? What variety of cherry is it? Is it a Bing cherry? Is it a sour cherry? They're all different. Don't obsess over it. The wood flavor differences are not huge, and the wood is just one component of everything. The meat is the most important flavor. Then comes salt. Then comes rub. Then comes the smoke. Then comes the sauce. All of those are instruments in the orchestra. So find one wood and stick with it. Now, the big exceptions are mesquite and hickory. They tend to be stronger and more distinctive. But, just pick one wood and stick with it until you get everything else under control.
Most people, and this has been tested, most people that of the average palate structure and don't eat or a lot of barbecue. I mean, they eat it, you know, 20 times a year, but they're not eating it three times a week type thing. They really can't tell the difference whether you use all the
cherry. It's worse than your suggest. I think if you went out and you got experienced competition cooks, they can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
Shag bark hickory tastes different than pig nut hickory. So yep. When you go out and you buy hickory, are you getting shag bark or pig nut? And how big is the difference really? And is it sun-dried or kiln-dried or air-dried? I mean, you know, just Just chill. Don't worry about it.
It's like the story of John Nils, who's a competition barbecue guy. He's won at the Royal and stuff, and he dries his he used to dry his wood in his wife's oven when she would go to bed at night. He would take his he would clean up his stick wood, and then he would stick it in the oven and put it on, you know, 100 degrees or whatever, just to kind of dry it. He got busted finally for that, and his, you know, but that's another story for another day. But I thought that was quite creative. He was drying it.
Yeah, I mean, how much moisture is left in the wood?
Yeah.
If you air dry it, I mean, and it rains, then there's going to be more moisture. But, you know, the other thing is you don't have to soak your wood. Wood does not absorb water very well. It'll just get a little bit on the surface. No competition cook, no barbecue restaurant soaks the wood. All you're doing when you're soaking the wood is you're making steam. You're not making smoke. All that white stuff coming out is steam. It's not smoke. You don't want to soak it. You want it to burn. You want it. Steam is created at 212. It doesn't start burning until it hits 500 degrees approximately. So you don't want to wet your wood. It won't absorb much water. That's why they build boats out of wood.
Yep, exactly. All right, now
let's
talk about...
That's my doorbell, I hope it
is. No, that's okay. Let's talk about beef ribs real quick. Of course, my friends at Painted Hills, they've, you know, that's great beef product and all that. But beef ribs, you can do the same thing. You can, most of the time when you go to your grocery store and you see a package of beef ribs up there, there's not a lot of meat on them.
No.
But you can ask your butcher to kind of give you a caveman rib, if you will, and they're thick, and you'll pay for them because you're getting some good meat on there. But if you do that, I think that people here would be pleasantly surprised because most people do think of ribs as pork. But if you get a good beef rib, it can be really delicious.
Yeah, there's different cuts of beef rib. The equivalent of the baby back is the ribs that come off of the prime rib. So if you buy a bone-in prime rib roast, there's seven bones in there. Those bones are often removed, and you get boneless rib roast or boneless ribeyes. And those rib racks can be purchased, and they have very little meat on top of them because that rib roast is so valuable that they don't leave much meat behind. There's a lot of shiners. But it's a really tasty cut, and there's a little bit of meat in between the bones, and they're a lot of fun. But as you move further down the side, you can get what are called short ribs from the plate, and that's towards the front of the rib cage, and that's where you get these dinosaur ribs. They're about 8 inches long. Typically, they come in a slab of four bones, 8 inches long, and two of those bones have meat on them that can be as much as 2 inches thick, and they're fantastic. The other two bones, the meat is a little thinner, down around an inch or less. Those front two bones with the inch, which an inch and a half, 2 inch thick meat on it, they are just fantastic. And usually you cook that slab of, they're called short ribs, but they're about 8 inches long. And you cook them as a slab rather than individual bones, and they can take 8-10 hours to cook properly because they're so thick, and they're often just salt and peppered.
Yeah,
you don't need a lot of seasoning, just like a steak. You don't need a lot of stuff on top of it, and rarely are they sauced. They don't need sauce. Beef certainly doesn't need sugar any more than cattle need wolves. You don't want to sauce them with anything sweet.
No, not really. And, you know, having worked in the and worked with and for beef companies, and of course I have a long association with Painted Hills, you know, they'll do that. They'll tell you if they're demoing something in a store and people say, what's on this? They'll say, oh, just a little salt and pepper, which is true. Because you really want to taste the meat. You know, beef has got such a wonderful flavor to it when it's raised and you know, finished properly and all that. not eating some old dairy cow. If you're eating some old dairy cow, be my guest. Dump anything on it that you want. But if you're eating a piece of choice or prime beef, you want to taste that. You know, that's my theory. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I mean, I like fiddling around in the kitchen and experimenting with sauces and different flavors. But, you know, a lot of meats fall into that category. You know, don't give me a piece of swordfish that you've got 14 different spices and herbs on. Just, you know, get out of its way. Let me taste the fish. And you know, people who, you know, I'm going to inject my Thanksgiving turkey with Dr. Pepper and Cajun spices. I want to taste the turkey.
Right.
So, you know, that's a, you know, a minimalist purist approach. But it works for a lot of meats.
Yeah, it does. It does. So how many people are you going to be feeding on the 4th?
Probably around 40. Maybe a few fewer. It's an annual event. My wife is a Chicago born and bred Italian American. Her parents were immigrants. They had three kids. Each of the three kids had three kids, and they all have three kids. And so it's, you know, Catholic multiplication. So they're all going to be here, and they love it. You know, we put out the sprinklers and the volleyball net and the wading pool and the slip and slide, and we just have a good old time. The weather's nice.
And by the way, we didn't mention this, but we will be mentioning it when he's part of the regular show. Meathead is the author of The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, and it's a New York Times bestseller. So there you go. And it's a it's a Jeff Tracy bestseller, too, because I recommend that book to everybody. So,
you know, Southern Living Magazine called it one of the 100 best cookbooks ever. Right up there with Julia and Jacques and all the other big shots. So I was really honored for that.
There you go. My friend, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful 4th of July. 40 people or not.
You too.
I will. I will.
We'll see you after the 4th, and look forward to being a part of your new project.
Yeah, you will be, and it's going to be a lot of fun. If anything else, it's going to be fun. I always have fun. That's
Anytime you're around, it's fun.
Okay, well, thank you. That's going to wrap it up for After Hours with Meathead. And if you're listening to After Hours, you know how to find us out there on the web, because we're in a lot of places. Until next week, I'm JT. And for my buddy Meathead Goldwyn, take care. Have a great 4th, everybody.